I'd like to call this Council and Budget Committee meeting to order. Madam Clerk, the roll call, please.
Your Worship, all members of Council are present.
Are there any disclosures of pecuniary interest? There being none, there are no announcements, and there is no addendum to this evening's agenda. So I'm going to hand the chair over to the chair of the Corporate Services, Councilor Zanko.
Thank you, Your Worship. Our first presentation this evening will be given by Craig Schufelt, CEO of the Fort Erie Public Library. Mr. Schufelt, can I ask you to come to the podium?
Okay, sure. Thank you for having us here this evening. We've split the presentation into two parts. The first is a review of the past year, and the second part will be the budget discussion. For the first portion, it will be done by Larry Graber, my board chair, who is standing behind me.
Thank you. Mr. Graber?
Come to the podium. Mayor, members of council, staff, board members, and friends of the library, thank you for allowing us to make this presentation. So, as Craig said, I'm going to do the first part, and then he'll do the second part, so I'll get started. The majority of the library-generated revenue comes from a combination of overdue charges, printing charges, and program revenue. The provincial operating grant amounts remains the same. Actually, it's been unchanged for the past 25 years. We are in the second of 2 years of our Niagara Prosperity Initiative grant, which we are using to fund our homework help program. And the funds from our Ontario Library Capacity grant were used to purchase several mobile devices for patron use and a new projector, which is an upgrade at our Centennial branch. After several years with Manulife, as our benefits provider, we switched in October to Great West Life. There were no changes made to coverage, but Great West Life just came in at a much better rate, and that's the reason for the change. We had a long-time staff member retire early in 2015, and were able to fill that position internally. We also had our children's and teen librarian resign in August. That position remains vacant, despite several interviews with promising candidates. I wish I'm hitting the wrong one. Okay. With help from our friends at the library group, we purchased and installed a play structure that serves as a centerpiece feature of the Crystal Ridge branch. The lighting upgrade at Centennial replaced 7 large existing lights with brighter energy-saving LED lights. We were also able to recover about 20% of the cost through an energy rebate program. The reading area, created with the financial assistance of the Fort Erie Rotary Club, situated on the second floor of the Leisureplex, and is being well used. We've received a large number of positive compliments from both Fort Erie residents and out-of-town visitors. 2 new computers were added in the teen area at Centennial, bringing to 25 the total number of workstations available for public use at the branch. We are always looking to add to our list of community partners, especially locally. I'd also like to mention one group not listed because they don't have a logo, the Birdie Historical Society, with whom we partner on a number of programs. By opening at 9:30 instead of 10 a.m. during the week at Centennial and Crystal Ridge, we were able to add 3.5 service hours without incurring any additional employee-related costs. The homework help program piloted at the Centennial branch in 2014 was extended to the Crystal Ridge location beginning in September of 2015. Besides the one-on-one tutoring assistance pictured here, Students also have the opportunity to play educational board games or use education-based apps on iPads purchased for the program. As mentioned earlier, we now have 25 workstations available for public use at Centennial Branch. We have started loaning out Google Chromebooks for use at two of our branches where there isn't room enough to add more space-consuming PCs. These mobile devices also offer patrons more privacy than our PCs, as they can use them anywhere in the building. The 10 computers replaced at Crystal Ridge are located in a pod around a pillar in the center of the library. We now have a total of 16 PCs for public use at Crystal Ridge. Our MakerBot 3D printer is now available for public use. The first item printed was, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing this right, I'm not a poke man, very knowledgeable with that anyway, but the first item printed was Gengar, or Jengar, a Pokemon character. This doesn't want to cooperate with me. Our number of cardholders, this is a picture of the teen computer area at Crystal Ridge, one that we like because it shows how popular the area is. Our number of cardholders reflects about a third of our community. While this number makes the library a very highly utilized public service, our goal is to see that number increased over the next 3 years. We've previously used this picture of a How to Shave for Men program held earlier in 2015, but it's just one of our favorites. The bottom right is a picture from one of the many class visits held at our Crystal Ridge branch. The slide on the left is from a magician program held during March break, while the one on the right is an author visit by Anne Marie McDonald. We work in partnership with the Pelham Public Library to secure grants from the Canada Council for the Arts that allows us to bring in popular authors for readings. Enter might work better. The slide on the right is one from our Therapy Tales programs, which we run several times per year. This program allows shy or reluctant readers the opportunity to read in the company of a non-judgmental animal companion. After 2014, which brought our first decrease in several years, we were happy to see a 6% increase in the borrowing of materials in 2015. For the first time, we have crossed the 190,000 figure in terms of items borrowed. Obviously, we want to see at least 10,000 more this year to bring it up over 200,000. This slide expands on the previous one, showing that circulation was up in each quarter. You can also tell from this slide that, as in past years, the summer months are busiest in terms of the circulation of materials. We have circulated 19,000 materials in a month three times in the past 3 years. Each time it occurred in July. Looking at our circulation by branch, you can see that Crystal Ridge saw the most significant growth among the three. We believe that this one comes from a restoration of service hours in 2014, along with improvements to the branch, including the play structure and new computers mentioned earlier. In case you were going to ask me who Anne Marie McDonald was, I did verify some information on her website. Not surprisingly, ebooks in both digital and audio format constitute the fastest growing segment of our circulation. We include this slide to show the dramatic increases in use over the past several years. Since 2011, e-materials have increased from 1.6% of our circulation to 11.8% in 2015. We include this slide every year simply to share what we believe are some of the critical roles that the library serves in Fort Erie. We tried to come up with an acronym for this one, and if you can help us, that would be great. So far, the only one we've come up with is SOAP, and we think we can come up with a better one than that. So that concludes my part of the presentation, and I'll ask Craig to come forward now with the rest.
All right, as Larry said when he started, I'd just like to thank Mayor Redekop and Council for having us here this evening, and to say thanks for my board members who are sitting behind me, along with some staff members and friends of the library who have been greatly supportive of us since their beginning. So starting with this slide, these are the four items that we consider essentially fixed costs for operating our three service points, assuming a full staffing complement. And of course, that last part is important considering that we've been without people in key positions often in the past couple of years. Preventative maintenance contracts that I've included on here relate especially to our HVAC units and both our fire and security systems. We have a number of overarching goals and objectives for this year. The first is regarding our strategic plan, which was initially created in December 2012 and which we've been following for the past 3 years. We spent several months at the board level discussing the document this year and realized that it was time to update the existing plan. Using a library consultant, we are going to take input from library staff, our board, and community stakeholders to create a new plan that we expect to have completed by spring. We had hoped to implement wireless printing in 2015, but we ran into some problems based on our network and the existing printers that we had. So we are looking at alternatives and hope to have that up by summer of 2016. It is something that we get a lot of questions about as more people come in with mobile devices, and it only makes sense since we're going to be offering more mobile devices at our branches. All three branches will see major furniture changes this year, including booth seating at Centennial, more seating and study space at Crystal Ridge, and both new seating and shelving at Stevensville. And we will use some grant funding to purchase more items like the 3D MakerBot printer that Larry showed earlier, things that will allow patrons to have their ideas made into something they can see or listen to or touch, something a little more tangible. This would include equipment and software allowing patrons to create audio and video content along with some other items. Continuing with goals and objectives, the Chromebooks and iPads that we've been offering to patrons have proven very popular, and we are hoping to lend out more for both in-library and take-home use. I don't know, something we were talking about earlier, Toronto Public Library is somehow lending people the ability to access the internet. And that was, so we have to look a little more into that. I'm not sure exactly what that entails, but it sounded like something that kind of taking that to the next step. It's interesting. We updated the signage at Centennial in 2014, and we plan to do the same at Crystal Ridge this year. It will likely also happen at Stevensville as the shelving is replaced. One of the main goals that we plan to stress in our updated strategic plan, and it's something that Larry referred to earlier when he mentioned the percentage of cardholders currently in the greater Fort Erie, is that we'd like to extend our scope in terms of cardholders and of number of people utilizing the library for whatever purpose. We'd like to reach a greater percentage, and we believe it's something we can do through aggressive outreach and advocacy efforts. And again, I believe that this is a spot where our friends of the library could help us be very valuable in advocating on our behalf. So getting into the budget amount, as you're aware, we're asking for a 2.0% or $28,982 increase to our existing funding for 2016. The 2% figure is also the salary increase all library staff receive beginning January 1st as per the terms of our collective agreement. Larry had already mentioned that the $60,682 number, which is all memorized because it's been the same for so long, has not changed for about 25 years. All indications are that this number isn't likely to change anytime soon. The province right now seems to prefer giving out larger one-time or one-off grants, such as the money that we received for the Library Technology Capacity Fund that we purchased the projector with, again, that Larry mentioned earlier. We have seen an increasing amount being paid in fines, which is slightly surprising given that e-materials expire instead of becoming overdue. So it's a bit of a pleasant surprise in terms of revenue. This is a snapshot of our three-year summary for our budget requests. All of our requests are in the 2.0 to 2.7% range over the next 3 years, although I would say that those numbers are definitely open to change, especially depending on the terms of our next collective agreement. The current one expires at the end of 2016. Salaries are obviously the biggest component of our budget, as well as any targets that may be set for us by the town in terms of budget numbers. One of our budget goals over the past few years is to try increasing our material spending each year, with our ultimate goal of eventually getting to 15% of all expenditures going to materials. This is the first year, at least during my time here, this is my fifth budget presentation, where we have managed to portion over 11% of our overall expenditures to this item. And continuing to increase the amount dedicated is especially critical given that our fastest growing area of circulation, the e-books that Larry mentioned earlier, are extremely expensive as compared to the print versions. And I know that's something of which council is aware. Actually, Councillor Nunziata had discussed it at previously. Sometimes we're paying 3 to 4 times the cost for an e-book that we would pay for a print version. This slide shows local funding for some regional library operating and capital reserve funds for comparable size, again, just in the Niagara region. I've had to use data from 2013 because the ministry hasn't updated statistics for 2014-15, but outside of a couple of large capital outlays, especially in a place like Lincoln that recently did a new building, from the operational perspective, I wouldn't expect any dramatic changes as to where we lie on this graph. I like this slide for the obvious reason that it shows that we're open more than anybody else's. So selfishly, I think that's a great slide. But I also wanted to use it to show the challenge we have compared to some others within the region in terms of fulfilling those service hours to the public. As everybody sitting up here is aware, we face the challenge of reaching a relatively small in population community over a large geographic area, hence the three service points spread out. Our 133 hours, I would point out, are 23 more than the next library in this chart. And if you were to take this chart and break it down further into cost per service hour, we would also come out in the first place. I have a couple of slides related to the goals and objectives. These are some items that we are planning to use our building reserve for. Through some gapping, especially due to the resignations and retirement, Larry mentioned some of them earlier, they've been happening for the past couple of years. We have retained a surplus in each of 2014 and 2015 that will allow us to complete all of these projects without requesting any municipal capital funding. I've already mentioned the furniture upgrades and the tools that would allow patrons to create content. Well, the upgrade of the AV system at Centennial that's mentioned on here has actually already started. Perhaps the biggest project on here. The current service desk at the Centennial branch, for those I'm sure most of you are aware, but it's quite large, takes up over 400 square feet of space in our library, and it's far from optimal as a workspace. We'd like to have a new, smaller desk that would open up the entryway and provide more usable space for the public. We do plan to double from 3 to 6, and then hopefully beyond, the number of PCs at Stevensville early in the year. We've already started on the measuring for some new tables, and we're likely to add, as I said earlier, more mobile devices to the Chromebooks that we're already offering there. The circulation at Stevensville has been relatively stagnant, you saw on the chart earlier, but we've had a noticeably larger number of people coming in hoping to use computers, which is why we rolled out the Chromebooks initially there first. I'd mentioned furniture on the previous slide, but I've specified children's furniture here because we need more or newer unique children-friendly furniture to be added at all three of our branches. And finally, going back to Stevensville again, some of the taller shelving, which is actually all of the shelving at Stevensville, for those of you who go in there, it's quite tall. All of the taller shelving at Stevensville will be replaced with smaller shelving that will allow for much easier browsing. It may mean reducing the size of the collection a little bit, but I think the trade-off is likely worth it for making it a better library experience. That wraps up what I had to say as far as the budget. Certainly, if anybody has any questions, comments, Larry and I will do our best to answer them.
Thank you very much, Mr. Schufeld, and thank you, Mr. Graber. I think that was an excellent presentation, and I also wanted to thank you, Mr. Schufeld, for offering additional help with any questions Council had within the past week, too. That was very helpful. Does any of my colleagues have any questions for Mr. Schufeld or Mr. Graber? Council Butler?
Thank you. Through you, Madam Chair, to you, Mr. Schufeld, I have a couple of questions.
Sure.
Your homework help program, how many children take advantage of this program?
Are you unique users or total numbers? I guess I would say total numbers. We're looking at Centennial right now. It's probably in the range of 6 to 10 students per day. It some days will be lower. It tends to grow as the school year goes on, as report cards are sent home. We do see some progress. Crystal Ridge, when we rolled it out, was very slow going initially. I mean, there were no students for the first month of the year. Now we've got three or four.
Thank you. And you said that you have 9,000 registered individuals. How many people flow through the three branches?
I believe the total visits last year, and of course there's no way to measure unique, but 175,000 visits according to our counters.
And I noticed, anybody can do the math, your biggest expenditure is your administrative costs in terms of staffing.
Yes, for sure.
Wages. But I wonder, what is comprised of your administration costs?
Are you talking about the administration
in the column, yeah.
$85,000, that I believe that's the dollar figure you're talking
82.9,
about?
$82.9,
yeah. Yeah, about $20,000 of that would be what the cost of our photocopier and printer contracts and maintenance. $6,000 for what we consider postage and courier. I'm looking at numbers for next year, so they may be...
Oh, that's fine, yeah.
Off by a couple of those. Some supplies, administrative supplies, $2,500. Professional fees and charges, which is $36,700, and I can give you a...
No, I think, you know what, I'm getting the gist of it.
That's okay. I was going to say the majority of that comes insurance is the biggest piece of it, which is low 20s. We always put some money in there for legal fees. Our audit would be included in that as far as professional fees is very vague, so I just wanted to give you a little more information. And then meetings and then training and development. Meetings, $3,800, training and development, $16,000.
And through you, Madam Chair, I just would like to know your automated systems, what would that be comprised of again?
Automated systems would be a combination of what we call full systems, which would be new computers. We only allocate about $13,000, $13,500 for next year towards full systems. We'll spend more than that on them, but we will try to seek out monies through technology grants.
And did you spend your full $42,000 last year?
Look at the number, if you don't mind. I believe that we bought some, I think we actually had some money left in, there was a surplus, mostly due to the full systems, by the fact that we did get some other monies to use towards those that we would have spent out of our budget.
And your building maintenance and repairs, did you use all of that?
Building maintenance and repairs was... Very close. I would say we had a little surplus in janitorial, but everything else, yeah, we were. I think the budget was 66, and we were at around 63.
And through you, Madam Chair, if I may, I'd like to ask you your surplus then.
Yeah.
You have 106,000 for 2014, 73,000. That's not a carryover. That's in addition to the 106.
It is in addition, correct. Yes.
And you have that in reserve funds, right, at this point?
Yes, we have. If you were looking at raw, the total raw number would be between, when you factor those in, would be about a little over $300,000 all told. We have $160,000 dedicated to this year for the building reserve projects that I had mentioned, which would leave about another $160,000, which we will be placing the remainder of it. We'll keep some in an operating reserve, just as a just-in-case fund. We are responsible for any issues below $20,000 that might arise with our buildings. So we'll keep some in there. The rest will go into capital reserve for future capital projects. And I'd mentioned that some of this comes about from the fact that we were very hesitant to spend money on our buildings for probably about period of about a year, slightly longer, because we weren't sure what role we might be playing in the development of the new high school, if a new library might be instituted there. So we've been very cautious, and like I said, the staff gapping is where we're seeing the huge surpluses.
My question to you, which I find very odd, is that you have very little dedicated to new programs. Very little. Why is that?
Are you talking about to programming? What do you mean to programs?
All right. So maybe I need an explanation as to what programs and promotion is all about.
Okay. Programs are the library programs that we run. The majority of those, we don't spend a lot of extra money on them because they're run by library staff. We do spend money to bring outside performers. You know, for March break, we'll have a theatrical group coming in to perform. We'll have a magician. We'll have a science group coming in. But no, we don't, it's not that we don't find programming is critical. I think it's one of the most important things we do, but there's very little cost besides staff associated with doing so. You know, if you're asking, could we bump that up? Certainly, I don't think that's a bad idea.
Yeah, no. And my question, my final question, Madam Chair, if I may, is your cost for the e-books, which you say is 3 to 4 times the cost of a regular book if it's a hardcover or a soft cover. Is there any plan to bring in more e-books, or are you going to remain status quo for this year?
No, we actually, we've dedicated a larger percentage. I believe it bumped from 15 to 16 to 20 in terms of our collections. And I probably have that with me. Actually, from 20 to 24 for this year, and we may go higher depending on popularity. Within this materials budget, we can shift items. You know, if we want to buy a little more in the terms of ebooks, we'll buy fewer hardcover, nonfiction, whatever it might be. But if anything was to happen with the publishers actually giving us fair prices, it would certainly help. But I would say that we do a better job than, and I'm not going to name any libraries, but some of the other regional libraries, all of us, with the exception, I think, of Niagara and the Lake, who recently pulled out and kind of went their own way. All of us in the region subscribe through the Southern Ontario Library Services, which is kind of an over provincial-wide group, to OverDrive, which is our ebook provider. We subscribe together. So we have, essentially, we pool our funds and have a shared collection. That's a portion of it. That's what we pay about $6,000 a year for. The problem with that is if you were to put an ebook on hold, you could be number 200 on the list because the people all over the province are using the same collection. So the rest of our ebook spending, which is about $15,000, are titles that we buy specifically for Fort Erie Public Library users. So I think we're certainly cognizant of the fact that our patrons want those, and we're trying to get them to them without making them wait for a year.
One final question.
Councilor,
I apologize. Where is that located on the line item? For ebooks, for purchasing of ebooks,
it would be under my materials.
Materials,
exactly.
Okay, awesome. Thank you.
Sure.
Are there any other members of council that have questions, Mayor Redekop?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you very much for the presentation. That was quite entertaining. More pictures would be welcome. I noticed that in terms of the budget of the $28,000 increase, the bulk of that is staffing costs,
mm-hmm.
Probably
80%. It's 71%.
Okay. And I notice that the line with respect to fines, as you pointed out, seems to be, I think you're under budget. Do you not on that?
Fines?
Fines.
$31,000. I think that's...
It's $31,000, 2014, $32,000, and a little bit last year. You're budgeting $31,000, so...
Yeah, I think we accounted for the fact that we're seeing maybe a little less in terms of programming revenue, but more in fines. And those are
right
together in line.
And I think one of the big concerns that I would have would be that over the last 2 years, there are significant surpluses, which you've been able to carry forward. And you did explain to some extent that had to do with the uncertainty about library services would be delivered. Were there any other reasons why those types of surpluses would be realized?
No, like I said, the majority is from the staffing. On my first budget slide, when I'd mentioned, I think I used the little caveat of this is what we consider a fixed cost, assuming a full staffing complement. The minute we have a gap in staffing, all of a sudden we are looking at a surplus, just because of the fact that it is 71.8%, I believe, are our projected expenditures. And I know that as far as that number is, that's not unique to us. That's pretty much in line. I mean, I've got the document. Pelham is around 80%, Port Colborne's 70, Thorold 70. I think we're all in the same boat, being the service that we provide.
If I might, Madam Chair, in terms of some of the upgrades that you talked about with respect to furniture and some of the other things, is that does that come under building maintenance and repairs in the budget, or how is that financed?
No, building maintenance and repairs is really for small repairs, what I would consider small repairs, or the maintenance. We do have a maintenance contract for libraries. We don't have a maintenance person, so we do contract out those services on a monthly basis. We also have a contract for the HVAC units and the fire and security that I mentioned. So those are all falling under that. The desk repair or desk improvement that I mentioned, which can be incredibly expensive when you start getting into design and redoing the floor and everything else, that would come out of capital reserves. That's something that we're planning on doing out of that capital reserve. Yeah, same with the furniture.
And I note that each year there's an allocation for transfer to building reserve.
And we haven't, I can't speak too much to, you know, the pre my time on the board, but during my time we haven't asked council, because of the fact that we've had these healthy surpluses the last few years, we're fortunate not having to have come to council at all for any kind of capital request. Like to keep it that way over the next few years by using this fund.
Questions? Thank you very much.
Does any other members of council have any questions? Councilor Passero?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Not a question, just a general comment. I was privileged to serve as council's rep from 2010 to 2014, and I appreciate all the good work that the board does. And I wanted to acknowledge as well, you had mentioned Friends of the Library and the good work that they do, because I think we'd be looking at an even larger increase if it weren't for their fundraising efforts to help offset specifically some of the capital purchases and children's furniture and playground equipment and things like that. So thank you for the good work that you do on a regular basis. One of the more active boards, and I think it's a very valuable service for our community. So thank you to everybody.
Meritica?
Sure. Yep.
Are there any other questions or comments? I actually have a couple questions and a comment. My first comment is I think that the Leisureplex reading area is a welcomed addition. I do spend a lot of time as a hockey mom there, and I always see children using that area, so I wanted to thank you for that. With regard to the children's and teen position that you'd mentioned that you're having difficulty filling, could you explain that position a little bit for me?
Sure. It's we have two what we call professional librarians, people with their MLS degree, Masters of Library Science. One is our information services librarian, who oversees the information department, the people who answer your reference questions, do the ordering for adult materials. The second professional position is the children's and teen librarian. And just like it sounds, they oversee all aspects of our children's and teen services, programming, ordering of materials, back to what Councillor Butler was asking about, programming. They would arrange all of the programs for March break. They run oversee summer reading. And yes, we did post it shortly after Laura Martin, our previous children's and teen librarian, left for Niagara Falls. We posted the position. We've had people come in for interviews. We had one person come from Alberta, looked around the town, and decided against coming. It wasn't an anti-Fortieri thing. It's just she decided to stay in Edmonton. But we've had five viable, promising candidates, and all of them left for other positions or stayed where they were. It's just, and it's cyclical. I've been in the profession for longer than I like to think about anymore. And it really, that's the way it goes. Sometimes there will just be a run on one particular position, or you'll just hit a bad luck spot. But we would hope to have that filled earlier this year.
Thank you. And just my second question is regarding the homework help program. I know you mentioned that some grant funding is going to be running out, so you're going to have to absorb those administration costs. And you did mention that the homework help program has become more popular over the years. Is the library the only community organization that provides this type of homework program?
There are some other, I wouldn't call them necessarily homework help programs. There are a couple of after-school programs out there. I don't think we're actively competing against each other. We were trying to go after specifically homework help. We don't position ourselves as a stodgy old library or anything, but at the same time, I've seen some after-school programs at libraries where it's essentially just kids running wild and killing their energy in the meeting room. We did want to have something that was very education focused, and that grant came from the Niagara Prosperity Initiative, which was at the time through the Business Education Council. Now it's through the United Way as far as administration. And the area around Centennial was targeted because of they went by socioeconomic measurements. And so we were really trying to push the educational aspect of it. I think that's something we value probably more than anything else we do at the library. Early childhood education, supplemental learning. We realized that that area, this is what we need. This area needs to be lifted, I guess, in terms of that. So that's where we came up with the homework help program.
Thank you very much. Seeing that there's no other questions. Sorry, Councillor Knott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through you to Mr. Shufelt. You're talking about spending a significant amount of money this year. So have you contacted the town procurement staff to see what kind of purchases they're making so that we could bundle in and save some additional dollars by purchasing on an economy?
We will be. That's actually something where we've, on an unrelated, not related to any of those items on building reserve, but we actually are working with the town on the replacement of the photocopiers and printers that I spoke of earlier. That is a pretty significant cost for us. I think we're looking $30,000 to $35,000 on a 5-year contract. So I have been in discussions with people at the town as far as the best way to go about that process, whether it's purchasing power together or at least going through OECM and using their knowledge and expertise to save some money, which is what we're doing.
Well, I know that because you get a grant, you'd qualify for the provincial.
Yeah.
Less than it was last year. For purchasing photocopiers and printers. Also, who owns the buildings that you're in?
The town.
Okay. Have you spoken to the procurement at the town or finance about possibly saving some additional dollars by bundling janitorial services under piggybacking some of their contracts so that we could buy some extra savings through maintenance?
We do bundle the janitorial contract with the town. Sean Hutton and I just toured Centennial and Crystal Ridge earlier with prospective bidders for next year. I believe the contract is up. So yeah, we are doing that whenever possible. We use the expertise of the town when we can. Now, I was actually going to thank Mr. Jansen sitting back here for all his help over the past couple of weeks. We think we know what we're doing most of the time, but certainly I know there's people at the town in positions that are definitely help. Bart Minaj has been great help with the copiers and printers.
Yeah. I'm not questioning by any means. I don't mean to insult you by knowledge.
No, that's not at all.
I just want to make sure that we're leveraging all of our business relationships to get the best possible bang for our buck when it comes to.
Oh, yeah. I didn't take it as a slight or anything. I agree.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mayor Etika?
If I might, do you have any idea when the vacant position will be filled with respect to the children's librarian?
I would say, if I had to guess, I would say March, April.
Might be going through a quarter without that position being filled. The
only
reason I raise that is because I think while you're still here, let me raise the elephant in the room. The elephant being the 60 $1,000 was saved last year, a $73,000 surplus, and a request for $28,000, with the likelihood that there'll be some savings with respect to your staffing budget for the first 3 months or at least 2 months of the year. So that's either going to be a sixth or a quarter year. So, but wishing to put any ideas into anybody's head, what if, how would you cover the your budget for 2016 if we didn't grant an increase of $28,000?
You mean how would we do it if you said there's, I mean, I think our, the only choice would be to use the funds that we have existing with those surpluses that we've had in the past 2 years.
You'd have some surplus from last year and you'd have 2015 and you'd have some cushion from,
Yeah, I was just going to give it. I would say you're probably looking, if it was a 3 month gap between salaries and benefits, you're likely looking in the neighborhood of $15,000. I would say some of that money will be factored into the homework help position, which we would begin picking up as part of ours, our payroll, assuming the grant isn't extended for a third year. It was a 2 year grant. We're certainly planning on reapplying, but if we didn't get that, we would have to wrap that into ours. But yes, I would say $15,000 would probably be the savings of that position being vacant for 3 months. Yeah, of course.
This is my second term sitting on the library board. And when I first came onto the board, I noticed that when there was a small surplus, it would be put into the next year's operating budget. So it would reduce that. But we had no reserves. So anytime we wanted to do something, we had to come to council. And so the discussion was that council really is micromanaging the library, because every time we want to do something, repairs, whatever, we had to come to town council for approval to get the money. So we said if we do get some money surplus, that we need to build up some type of reserve. And we haven't come to what is a satisfactory level of reserves, but you know, when we're talking $170,000, that's roughly 11%, 13% of our total budget. So we're talking, we're going to have reserves that could keep us going for a month if we lost all funding, which isn't likely to happen. But at the same token, any expenses under $20,000 we're responsible for. Not that we expect we're going to get hit with four or five in one fiscal year, but to be fiscally responsible, we felt that we can't keep putting that money in. We have to build up some type of reserves. So that's the rationale behind it. Also, we weren't spending any money for the last 2 years waiting for the outcome of the high school. Now we know what we need to do, and we can go ahead with some of the replacement options that we were looking at last year and postponed.
Mayor Ritterko?
Yeah, no, I appreciate that explanation. I certainly think it's prudent to try to have reserves. I guess the other point would be that if we flatline your budget allocation, that has a carry forward implication as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Councillor McDermott?
No, I just want to thank you for your presentation. I've been a member of the library board for a number of years in different administrations, and one thing that I've always realized that it doesn't matter who the board members are, they can change each and every year for that matter. They've always been very prudent when it comes to spending. And to me, the library service, for the amount of percentage of the budget, certainly does a stellar service for our community, whether that's increasing our memberships, the programs after school, and the programs during spring break and the winter breaks. We're growing, and that's a very good thing. And we're a catalyst for learning in many different areas in literacy in our community. So I support your budget. I might not, if the reserves continue to grow over the next number of years. I kind of think we really have to be prudent in that area, because so many things are going up, council has to, you know, try and find money for it. So we might have to cut back on reserves in the future, but I mean, this year, I'm not going to quibble over 26,000, but I would say that council will have to come up with a plan over the next number of years on how we deal with not only libraries, but different branches with regards to reserves, because I think it's much better that we have that in reserves in town hall for other things as well. Thank you.
Are there any additional comments or questions? I don't see any, so, Councillor Passero?
Just very quickly regarding the recruitment of that position, be very careful of those librarians that you import from Alberta.
They're one for one, so.
Thank you very much again, Mr. Schufeld and Mr. Graber. If we could get a copy of that wonderful presentation that you provided us, that would be great.
Of course.
Next, Mr. Jim Tibbert will be presenting on behalf of the EDTC. And also just want to mention, as far as the library staff and board go, if you don't want to stick around for this portion, you certainly don't have to. You're free to go. I think as our next presenters become ready to provide presentation, we're just going to take a 5-minute break for the listeners at home. Okay, we're going to get started now. If everyone could take their seats. Mr. Pilato and Mr. Tibbert, welcome. Will you be doing the first portion of the presentation? Or?
I will.
Okay, excellent. First, I want to say that the presentation that we received is quite beautiful. I think it makes a wonderful marketing and sales collateral piece for potential developers, and I was pretty excited to see it this way. So very, very
exactly
well done on that.
Exactly one of the reasons we did it that way, so that
it
can be used for that. I believe we printed, how many? 5,000 or 500.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So we'll have some here and be able to distribute them.
Excellent.
So,
thank you.
Madam Chair, Mayor Redekop, and members of council, it gives me great pleasure and to have this opportunity for the EDTC to present this year's budget and work plan. The EDTC continues to move forward in improving opportunities for both existing and potential new businesses in Fort Erie. Our staff has worked tirelessly to expand Fort Erie business development and continue to create opportunities by fostering a positive environment for business. I want to thank our staff for their perseverance, dedication, and loyalty to our community. It is not easy to be continuously under scrutiny by some members of the community and still be able to stay focused on the job at hand. Thank you to council for your support. It takes teamwork to make things happen, and thank you for the extraordinary efforts by our staff. Together we can achieve our goals to make Fort Erie a place to want to live in, work in, and be proud of. I would also like to acknowledge the board members in attendance this evening: Rick Gorham, Vice Chair, Wayne Nelson, Treasurer, and of course Mayor Redekop and Councillor McDermott. Let me also introduce Jim Tibbert, our EDTC General Manager, for without his professionalism and knowledge, we may not have achieved what we have achieved. So Jimmy, if you take the floor. Thank you.
So Mr. Mayor, members of council, senior staff, our board, ladies and gentlemen, the chairman in his remarks, and more particularly in the budget itself and the report, he's got a much more extensive dialogue, points out that the mandate of the EDTC is to create opportunities for existing and new business and to foster an environment conducive to business growth and prosperity and economic diversification. This report tonight will provide an overview of 2015 our activities and outline what plans we have for 2016. We have completely reformatted this document from what used to be the typical old two-inch binder for a couple reasons. We heard from people that they, you know, would like to see more comprehensive what it is that we do out there. And so we ended up working with the Chamber of Commerce every spring to open that up and talk about what we did and the economy and things like that. But more so now we have a document, as you pointed out, Councillor, that we can have as a sales document. We can readily update it. It's all digital. And we can move the graphics, move the text, change things relatively easy now. So it was a horrendous effort, and we have been running short for almost a full year here in terms of staff, but everybody pulled together and we got it done. So more specifically, the EDC acts as a liaison between the business community in Fort Erie and the Council of Fort Erie. Our mandate is to exploit, create, and attract growth opportunities. For it is growth that makes the world go around. And without growth, without increased revenues to the town, costs go up. Without growth, we stagnate and things change. So we need the growth in order to meet your constituents' requirements, to not have tax increases, to get more services. Only two ways to do that. You either charge people more for the services because it costs more to deliver, or you bring more people into the community to share that load. And that's what the growth is. Our end of it is to bring the jobs in, so that the families that result from the workers there can contribute to the wealth of the community and add to that fabric of life. Our big goal is to ensure our tools are ready. We need industrial land. We need skilled labor, energy, capital. We focus on business retention, expansion, and attraction, capacity building, promotions, and lobbying. So before you is the 2015 annual report, and 2016 budget in this entirely new format. And we're always glad to hear from you or the public on how well we did and what we might be able to do to make it even better next year. We do have 500 copies in overrun, so we're going to be distributing them to our folks that participate with the EDC in the round tables. We're going to share them with the Chamber of Commerce, and then we will have some here at the town and at the EDC for any constituents that might be interested in it. So let's go back to the macro economy of Fort Erie, because everything that we plan to do is all related to our projection over the next year or 2 years or so, and where the analysis of where we come from, so that we know when we're doing something in economic development that it's going to result in something positive and that it's in vogue with what we see as the trend lines. So in terms of the national economy, we put some graphs up there, and they're effective as of December. You can see the value of the Canadian dollar versus the U.S. We have sub $50 a barrel oil, which is now down around $30. The slide in the strength of the Canadian dollar is down to 70 cents, actually hit 69 yesterday, I think it was. But there still are companies holding on to significant cash reserves and deposit at record levels. So there's money there to expand. And the other big problem that we have that's on a provincial level is the cost of energy. We have the high cost of energy. The province has said it'll be going up 45% over the next 3 years. And of course, we have the global adjustment charge, which at this point is now more money than the actual cost of producing the energy. So that affects all of us in Ontario. Where it affects us is the competitiveness between us and how they compare us to New York or elsewhere nearby with locations for companies. Canada's exports grew for the first time in 4 months in November, and as of last Friday, they're still doing fine. The trade deficit is narrowing to below $2 billion in the month, and that's a good sign. And exports grew by 0.4%. So what we're looking at is that the value of the Canadian dollar is finally kicking in, and exports are probably going to be far more competitive. There's an opportunity for us to switch from more local companies for opportunities for growth and start looking again into the States to attract American companies into Canada. So there's a lot of good stuff. The bad stuff about a Canadian dollar, and we all know this from history, we have a brain drain. We have a youth drain. So the more people we send to college, the smarter they are, the more they go to the United States because they're in demand, it's growth there, and they can make at least the same money here, but in American dollars. And so that's what happens. We lose our nurses, we lose our doctors, we lose our scientists. So there's a time for that to happen, but we have to be ready for that, because if we already have skill shortages, you can anticipate we're going to have companies wanting to develop. And if we don't plan it properly, we won't have the skills or the management team. I'm not certain that everybody understands how the dollar gets tied to oil, but basically you can just consider it in a simple form that that's the world economy, pretty much Americans. And what they think of Canada in terms of our total debt load for the national government and the total deficit annually. Can we manage our debts and still pay the interest rates? And we're still running a deficit every year adding to that debt. So the question is, are you confident in the world of investment in Canada being able to do that? And so they were. They look at oil as a commodity, and if you got lots of oil and it's up there at $100 a barrel, you can afford to pay it. But if it's $30 a barrel and you've stopped production, now we got to worry about somebody paying the bills, and that's what they do. So they devalue our dollar to 70 cents, 85 cents. It seems to follow, as people call it, a petrodollar, but that's what it's all about. It's really not about petrodollars. It's about confidence in the Canadians being able to produce and maintain the standard of life that they have. So we have to work within this, and it'll be a challenge. But the one thing for sure is the more jobs we get, the better off we're going to be. So in terms of the Niagara economy, we've got some things going on in Fort Erie and Niagara. We've got continued success at the Fort Erie racetrack. We've got Peace Bridge crossings are up, and that's reflected in more tourism and more travel because of the dollar. We have, we'll probably start to see this year a very significant shift from who travels on the bridge. So there's a likelihood that less Canadians will be going across because they don't want to spend 40 cents extra, and more Americans will be coming across to take advantage of our tourism opportunities. We have some huge, large-scale development projects with investors and with money, namely the Canadian Motor Speedway, the Fort Erie Racetrack lands with the CMP company from Buffalo, Miller Creek Marina, and they're there to add to the Fort Erie core of tourism generators, meaning the Old Fort and Safari Niagara. And we have interest, increasing interest, developing from brokers in the GTHA area that we've started to network over the last 2 years, and they're starting to pay dividends because they're bringing us clients that want to get out of Toronto, and they like Niagara and Fort Erie. So we do meet every year in order to help process this budget and our plan, which is a total plan for our economic development. Where do we go? Can't be piecemeal. It's got to be a strategy. And so we meet with our industrial leaders. We meet with our residential commercial investors and developers, and we meet with local bankers and professionals in finance. And what we found out again this year is there's a significant number of Fort Erie's larger industrial-based companies that are expanding and continuing to expand. And some of them are expanding in absolutely record fashion, buying companies in the States, buying facilities in the States to cut out the middleman on distribution. They're very astute business people in Fort Erie, and they're very efficient at what they're doing, and they're growing some at the rate of 10 and 12% a year for the last 3 years. We have one company right now that disclosed to us that their biggest problem this year is trying to slow the growth down so they can adjust to it. You know, there's people out there that would say there's no jobs in Fort Erie, but it's not quite true. Sourcing labor remains a problem for all of them, for local industry, and that is both skilled and unskilled labor. That is just even entry-level jobs. Fort Erie's image is slowly improving. In 2015, it was a strong year for residential developers, and residential sales were up and strong. We also found out that not all residents share confidence in a prosperous future for Fort Erie. There are people that have doubts. They hear about these projects. They see them over and over again, year after year. I'm not certain everybody understands how long it takes to move a $300 million project, but it's not all that easy, and even if you have the capital. So we really have to get some of these over the top if we're going to be successful in making our constituents happy and creating those jobs. In 2014 and 15, it has been very, very tough on small business. Places with employees less than 10 or 15, they've had a very, very tough go no matter what business they're in. It's just more governance, the shift in the dollar, the competition for labor, competition for contracts, bigger companies folding, bigger companies changing suppliers. It's a very, very difficult thing to run a small business. Small business typically about 10 employees or less, but I would talk about those companies maybe 20, to 1 to 20 jobs. So I just want you to understand that we understand it, and we all have to be somewhat sensitive to costs for any type of business. Small business, particularly in Fort Erie. So we've tried to talk over and over the years about different models and different things that we do. So we finally have put our heads together and come up with a graphic that we call the EDC's Continuum of Service. So let me start off by telling you that there's a disproportionate line here where it looks mostly like the EDC in very little town. Well, the reason it's very little town isn't that they have very little to do. It's just that we're talking about the EDC's role right now, and I'm sure Mr. Cookett and Mr. Brady and Mr. Walsh can fill in page after page underneath. We're just talking about the development continuum, and of course there is a relationship there with the town for rezoning and pre-application process and consultation and ideas. So what we wanted to do is show you where we fit in and what we focus on. So our first is business attraction, and you can see the various components that we deal with in that. We do our due diligence and business case support. In terms of business retention, that's an ongoing thing and can be something that happens along with business retention once it's actually built. We have ongoing operational issues that we deal with companies. We bring them forward to the town for development approvals process. But what I want to demonstrate here is that in the spectrum of development, there's a lot more than just, let's say, the building permit process or the planning process or the engineering process. The same as there's more processes in the town than just the business's engineering design group, right? Each of them have their own specializations, but sometimes we can be dealing with a business in first and second and third generation projects. And in cases with some businesses, we've dealt with them in their existing business. We've helped them locate sites, and we spent 3 years helping hold their hand to get them to the point of expanding and investing significant dollars for themselves. So it's quite the continuum of service. We could probably talk for hours on that, and any questions you have, I'm happy to talk to you about. Hole in my lip. So it seems that there's also a little bit of a problem with some people interpreting our former approaches to these budgets talking about business attraction retention. So what we've done is we've gone back and completely revamped that into a more specific set of frameworks of 7 strategic responsibilities. The first is grow and retain business. And that's where business expansion, retention, and business attraction fit in. The second is grow and retain job opportunities. So along with strategic goal one, our focus is on business leadership and investment risk, and that's critical decisions that are necessary in the availability of labor and skills. And strategic goal two is to focus on local residents benefiting from these jobs. Doesn't do us any good if we bring companies in and we don't have local residents working there. So at one time, it was just a question of availability of the job. Now we've been promoting for the last 3-4 years that local residents have to have skills for those jobs, because otherwise the competition will just eat them. We're here doing economic development, not just for tax growth, but for the jobs for our residents. Also, in number three, attract new investment opportunities. We can identify what Fort Erie can deliver, and believe me, we must make a value proposition that we can deliver upon, and our job is to help identify the people who would be looking for what our product would be. Number four is capacity building, and through leadership, we help Fort Erie businesses and council and the community stakeholders translate vision into reality and leverage our limited resources more effectively. And number five, promote and build Fort Erie's profile outside the community. We do very little in the community because our job is to attract business here. It's our job to help business here, but it's not our job to market ourselves here. That's not it at all. We market Fort Erie and promote Fort Erie outside the community. We support developers and investors through the build process in number six, and then, of course, we do have our own administrative responsibilities such as rent and cleaning and contracts and things like that. It all takes time, it all takes effort, and it's all operationalized through our budget. So I think now when we take a look at this and we get into how we've completely redeveloped our reporting process over these seven responsibilities, I'd like to point out two things. First is that these little notes are line items. Each line item, and I can point out cases where it's taken years or work with companies for years. So a line item just doesn't casually dismiss it as something simple or not ongoing or not a lot of effort. The second thing is that we can only put kind of hints down to the corporate names and corporate activities because we're bound by confidentiality with our businesses. We can't disclose things. It's not our business to disclose them, and it's up to the client to disclose what decisions they make when they're ready to make them. So I think we all have to point out that there has to be some sense of confidence in the board of directors who we do disclose to, who know everything, and two of them are on council. But we can't go out to the public and disclose a lot of privileged, confidential business information. Trust us to. And it is amazing that all our clients do, in fact, work with us and trust us. So on the first one, I can take you through the strategic goal, of course, grow and retain business. And the majority of new business growth develops through existing businesses and addressing new opportunities for those businesses. Maintaining existing and established businesses is as critical as attracting new business and investment is. So if you look, we have primarily business expansion and business retention. If you carry across the operational strategy into implementation, the first column you see is what we refer to as foundational efforts. So that's things we've done over the last 15 years, and we can put it up there and give you some examples of what we have achieved, what we've brought in form of business expansion and retention. The next column is the 2015 highlights and an indicator of what we've done. And then 2016 is what we're going to do related to those items because they're not all completed yet. So, for instance, we have Truck King. You are aware as council that you approved a sale of land to Truck King that we recommended 3.81 acres on Monday. They are looking to expand their property, develop more jobs there. So that's the type of thing that comes from a single line. We'll be working with them on completing that sale and working with the town of Fort Erie to do that. We'll be working with them on their expansion, and we will be working with them to perhaps come up with more things to do on the property than we first anticipated. Second line, we have Black Creek Metals. We've been working with them for over 3 years, and you're aware that they have now purchased property up on Winger and Eagle Street, some acres, and they're in the process of making an application to the town for a major new facility there for manufacturing. We can go through this list. It's interesting that everybody wants to know what we do, but they don't want to sit here and listen to us for 5 hours. You all know that it takes 5.5 hours because you've all been briefed as counsel, and it took 5.5 hours, and we disclosed everything to you. So we don't want to do that. It's in the document. I just wanted to get to the point where we could describe to folks, if you're reading this document, this is how it's laid out, and this is why, and this is what it means. And so everybody's comfortable with that. So we have all 7 of our strategic responsibilities there, and you can go through them all. Fairly extensive. And this replaces what we used to have as the checklist. Now, again, I'll caution you that when we had the checklist, some people who wouldn't necessarily be our supporters would find a little fault and say, well, I see the same company name under 2 sections. Well, that's because we did 2 separate things with them. I mean, that's pretty obvious. But it is time. It is a client. It is a client account, and it shows up under business expansion. May show up under business retention, too. But they were 2 separate things. So we would also note that as we developed this strategy, and the EDC is pretty good at that, there's a couple things we would let you know about how we think about strategies, not just developing them, but a good strategy, a solid strategy, is as much about defining what you do or don't do as what you clearly articulate that you will do. It's also good strategic management supports the focus on goals and projects that will make a significant difference to the future prosperity of Fort Erie. That's our mission. And a strategy without focus is like trying to be all things to all people. You can quickly realize if you don't have that strategic discipline that you're really not accomplishing much. So part of our mandate in Fort Erie, and that's tourism. And in tourism, our strategy is to focus our resources, our efforts of our staff, primarily on the idea of attractors. And so since we started, we have brought in excess of $1 billion worth of tourism projects. We have a Canadian Motor Speedway. We have the CMP properties out in front of the track that's upwards of $280 million, and we have the marina project. Our job is to bring the opportunity. Our job is to bring the investor. Here they are. Then we work with everybody who's in the regulatory roles and try to get them all approved. They all have investors. They all have money. It's perplexing to all of us. And yourselves, too. I know I've talked to staff. I've talked to counselors and the mayor. It's perplexing to all of us that we can't seem to get these things to actually pull the trigger. There's always something in the way from the government or whatever, but it takes time. The clients have to be ready with their site plans. There are rules and regulations for safety reasons and good plans, but we will get there. The name attractor is because they're large scale, and we know that when you have such a significant development, that there will be many, many businesses that can capitalize on those developments. So what will happen is you bring in something like Canadian Motor Speedway. The estimate is 3.5 million new people coming in to Fort Erie every year. Restaurants will be full. People will be starting more restaurants. People are going to be here for a week. They're going to need dry cleaning. You know, I'm sure the LCBO is going to be happy. There's a lot of business that's going to transpire, and as a result of that, when you move that economy, when you move that economic wheel, there's going to be jobs, and there's going to be revenues, and there's going to be people wanting to grow here, and the town expands. So that's why we focus our efforts. There's only a few of us with skills in the background we have, and we will help any tourism business we already have. We work with many, many of the festivals. We work with many, many tourism related businesses, but it's an open door policy. When they need us, they're here. They should know we're here. We dealt with very many of them, And I think they all understand that. So when there's a problem, they come to us. So it is a strategy that focuses on prosperity for the future as opposed to running around trying to put out fires today. So we deal with tourism product development, marketing and promotions, industry engagement, service excellence. One of the things that we often forget is that we do put out the visitor's guide. It takes an awful lot of effort for our staff to put this out, but just so you're aware of it, the visitor's guide in Fort Erie has 85,000 copies distributed. We have a distribution company out to local media outlets, the Toronto Hotels and Attractions, 60 Southwestern Ontario Tourism Operations and Centers throughout the Ontario on information travel centers right across Ontario, community information centers as well. We have 100 Rochester locations, 40 Erie, Pennsylvania locations, and over 50 Buffalo Niagara locations that are maintained. The product itself, if you were to try to produce it, would be in excess of $100,000. Have the actual production cost based on contract down to $3,000. So we have the company that produces it for us, developing the advertising that helps pay for the costs. We pay the $3,000 in setup fees. We have local distribution cost of $5,000. And we have CTM that distributes it for us at $35,000. So our total cost on this is about $43,000. Now, when I first got here 15 years ago, the tourism guide was 25,000 copies, and it was at a cost to the corporation of close to $40,000 to produce and to distribute. And so for the same amount of money, we're distributing it right across that network and produce an 85,000 copies. Well received and well reviewed. Good Lord, it's the Fort Erie Racetrack, something that I'm the CEO of, so I'll declare that conflict right now, although everybody knows that. And I do that as part of my function in the EDC. It's job retention. We're either gonna close the track or somebody had to roll up their sleeves and go do it, and Council, they said, go do it. So, in reporting what happened last year, we had 40 days of racing, and our contract calls for 37, and that's because we had some really good performance in the years before. Last year, we had 9 million dollar plus wagering days. That's June 2nd, July 28th, August 4th and 25th, September 1st, 8th and 29th, and October 13th and 10th. And in the past, the record was $2 million plus days, and we set that last year, the year before, in 2013. And before that, there was only $1 million day, and that was the Prince of Wales Day. There was a 3.6% increase in live wagering, a 39% increase in remote sales, 30% on per race basis increase year over year, 4% increase on on-track attendance, 4% increase in program sales. Our patronage went from 16 to over 20% of our fans, and we have significant cost savings tactics. We actually have retendered our property and liability insurance. We saved about $1,000 doing that. Our landlord let us reduce the gross amount required to cover property and liability insurance. And in doing that, we saved about another $40,000. And then we just recently retendered our D&O, and we saved $5,000. So last year alone, we saved that. It's very difficult to incur any savings because we're operating on a kind of a shoestring budget. But I would tell you that we do produce and spend in excess of $14 million a year. So since we have taken over the track and we have managed it, we have managed to keep $112 million worth of economic activity, direct economic expenditures in this town. So notwithstanding it's our biggest and longest standing tourist attraction, notwithstanding we have about 200 FTEs and jobs over there, We have probably 450 to 500 horse people that have careers based on this. So all that economic activity translates to over $100 million that the EDC, because of our involvement in creating FELRC and managing it, we have managed to keep in this town. This is a world record business retention exercise. I'd also point out that council has contributed $150,000 coming up. We're most grateful to that. Looking forward to another record year. Somehow I suspect that it's a lot easier to have a record year if you pray for less rain in the fall. So once you hit June, please pray for less rain. Yeah, it's all in our... you can rain on Wednesday all you want, but we need Tuesdays and Sundays. So we do have a calendar already. It's subject to a bit of modification depending on our horses. I have instructed our staff to put together a proposal to see if we can't mechanically as well as functionally perhaps open 2 months early on a fee-for-service basis, because we have a feeling that the horse people that actually do bring horses down south to race to keep them in shape are spending 40% more on the dollar. And if we can get them back and if they're willing to pay down there, we think they would be willing to pay up here. So we might be able to get that 2 months on a fee-for-service basis and keep the track open a little longer. It all depends. We got a 118-year-old facility, and sometimes when it gets cold, leaks happen. You know, I mean, Fort Erie's kind of like that, right? But we don't have the money to fix it, so we got to be careful about that. But we will see how that goes, and we would make that announcement in the next month if we're going to make it at all. And it's got to go to the board anyway. Next thing that happens is our tourism strategy. We've decided to try to put a graphic and try to keep this as a more visual representation. So what happens is, on the high side for our effort, this is our effort graph. It's not a reflection on tourism itself as an industry. It's a reflection on our effort in tourism. So our three biggest projects right now are Canadian Motor Speedway, Miller Creek Marina, and the Fort Erie Racetrack development and the racetrack itself. What's missing here is that we also have a pipeline of other projects that may fall into this category, but we left that out just for simplicity. And as you can see, because we do three-year budget planning and three-year strategy, what happens with the Canadian Motor Speedway is you can see that we figure by 2016, as things are going along, we're going to end up doing more work related to the Canadian Motor Speedway. Well, how does that happen? Well, we're hoping to get this thing approved and kickstarted by 2017. Where our effort comes in related to the Speedway is it will functionally be about $150 million, but they have plans for another $300 to $400 million in terms of the schools, the academics, and the industrial park. So we would be working with them on those ancillary operations, and we'll be gearing up business by business. So we think our activity will pick up on those areas as related to the Speedway, which is already going to be moving forward, right? So it's not like once they decide to pull the trigger and open, that our job is less. It's actually going to be more. In the case of Miller Creek Marina, we think it's going to be quite the opposite. We think that what happens is, because of the nature of that business and contained on site, and because it takes professionals and they're going to staff that up, that once we get that approved, let's say in 2017, our effort at that point will be related to using it for marketing, to facilitating some development and promotion. But our effort will start to fall off on that, because it's a site that's contained. They know what they're doing. There's not much more. It's all going to be built at once. Boom, there you go. So we will all benefit, but it's our effort on this graph. We anticipate that'll be a good thing, because we have some other developments in the pipeline, and we're going to need manpower and skills to do that. And Fort Erie Racetrack, we see that, let's put it this way. We're hoping that eventually our role is diminished. The only way that our role can be diminished is if we're successful in getting the development of the projects, if we're at the big projects, if we're successful doing that, then we think that we will be successful in getting some cooperation from the province on the track as an anchor, and also perhaps additional gaming on site. At that point in time, it may be more viable for us to spin off the track or to bring in a private sector entrepreneur that wants to take responsibility for it and believes they can actually make a go of it. So all of that would happen in terms of post 2017, but we'll see how that goes. Our goal is to kind of get there. Can't just walk away from it. And I don't want to cause a panic with the horse people saying I'm not going to be there, but ultimately they've all been told our goal is move along, right? We want that thing more self-sustainable. Then we have our festivals, events, our fishing, our traditional beaches, Safari Niagara, our historic sites. We see those things picking up. As the key projects kick in, these will kick up. And as they kick up more extensively, they're going to be coming to us for some assistance, whether it be grant letters, grant support, advice, or even new organizations coming out of the woodwork. Then we have the spinoff on those of all our retail stores, our campgrounds, accommodations, marketing. Those are the feeders, and those will start to pick up as well. You can see the priority of work for us in terms of the hierarchy and in terms of where we see our pressures. So now in relation to that, in the pre-budget format, when we provide you with two budget documents, one is the administrative element and one is the program element. It was broken down initially when we started this years ago into business attraction, retention, and expansion. And then we broke those down if they required into sectoral partnerships, marketing. You can see some what appears to be duplication, right? Why would there be marketing in all three components? Well, one's related to business expansion, one's related to business retention, and so on. So because we've gone to the seven responsibilities, this year will be the only year where there is a transition. In the future, they'll all look the same again, but we've put them into the seven responsibilities as we've outlined in the beginning. So there's our budget. Give you the administrative broken down as much as we can, and then we have the 2016 budget plan, and this is the format that you'll see coming forward. Everything that relates to expenditure categories over here, they don't really exist anyway. They exist as a grouping within our general ledger, and there's many dozens and many hundreds of cost centers within the general ledger, and we just group them into those groups for convenience. So they're all transcribed over to this side. So we have followed the instructions of the PAO that we look at 2% max. We have 1.5% administration costs, and I think we're pretty much 1.5% overall. I can go to the next slide. We produced this slide, which we thought would be interesting, but this is a slide that says, all right, based on where we're at, this is what the expenditures look like. So this is an expense-driven graphic of where we're going. If we go ahead with the budget in 2016, in terms of our program dollars, these are the kind of expenses or categories based on the $185,000 that we will spend. It's just a pie chart that shows what we anticipate based on the strategy, but it's also related to our experience. So if that helps, fine. If it doesn't, throw it away. Just a graph. Interesting enough, the next one is a breakdown at 100% of budget. It shows where our salaries are, where our statutory and benefits are, and then takes those other program or all of the breakdown in terms of the costs and breaks them out as a percentage. So you can see that 46% of the of the entire pie that you approve for the based on salaries and wages. There's about 13% that's related to statutory benefits and obligations, so that brings you up to, 50.4%. That's pretty reasonable given that the vast majority of our effort is people-related. It's skills, it's staff that know things, it's us involved in meetings and telephone calls and things like that. That's not anywhere near as high as most businesses are related to public service. Teachers, I think, are 90% salaries. Police are pretty close. We're sitting there at probably the range of 60% is what that is, if you add up benefits, statutory obligations, salaries, and wages. So we're people-driven, skills-driven, experience-driven, and cost-effective. Very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Tabir. Does any members of council have any questions or comments for Mr. Tabir? Mayor Redekop?
Thank you very much, Mr. Tabir, for this very brief presentation in my experience. And thank you to the chair of the board for warming you up. Just some questions. Historically, and when I mean historically, I mean ancient past, there was a format where there were regular meetings between representatives from the EDTC and a committee of council to periodically, I think it was quarterly perhaps, or maybe three times a year, discuss the objectives, see where things were going, how things were going. See any benefit in reinstitution of that?
Well, the foundation of the board is that there are thirds of the board is members of council. And that's because council's directed us to maintain an independent corporation. It can't be the majority. I think there's always been a situation with the various councils that the information that the councilors get at the EDC, even though it's confidential, can't be shared. That's not true at all. We would anticipate that the reason for having the mayor and council or councilors on our board is so they can come back and feed that information back to the balance of councilors. So I don't know if there's an opportunity for you to do that, because it seems like under the Act, any time more than four you get together, it's got to be a public meeting. So how do you discuss confidential information? There has been some discussion of late about whether or not a councilor or a couple counselors can attend a board meeting, and the answer would be yes. Our advice to you would be probably one of you at a time, because you can't have any more than three there. But in fact, if you were sitting as an observer, it would help brief you on an up-to-date basis, and if everybody took a turn, then you've been there twice each year. We used to have meetings in closed session with council. It was always kind of tough to schedule around everybody else's work schedule, and it tends to last a long time. It tends to last several hours because we're dealing in detailed information. And the problem with that is it's pretty much a one-way street, because if it's a closed session, you're not entitled to undertake the work of council. So it gets to be... I could probably put it on tape and send it to you and get the same results, right? I mean, it's just a lecture. So
it'd actually be better, because then if we get tired, we could just turn it off.
You can turn it off, exactly. That might be a good approach. You can listen to it when you need to. But this idea that perhaps another counselor can sit in every month, you guys work it out, we'd be happy to have that.
Mayor Redekop?
So I wasn't quite sure what you said, but is it possible for the council representatives on the EDTC board to share minutes of the team meetings with counselors on a confidential basis?
Probably have to check with the board on that. From my perspective, the answer would be no. We would do so on the undertaking that if we have any names within the minutes, we'd have to blank them out. But otherwise, you'd get the gist of things. And as long as the councillors agreed that these are restricted in circulation. I've said this many times. This is my 15th year in Fort Erie. I have confided in all of you. I have confided in every council. I have confided in senior staff. I have never seen a breach of confidentiality. Never. So I'm batting 1,000 here with you, so I don't find that a problem at all.
Mayor Redekop?
I think I'm confused now by the answer. I thought initially it was that probably no, they couldn't get the minutes, but because council has been historically capable of maintaining confidence, that maybe yes?
Yes, that's what I would think, yeah.
So, but that's a decision for the board. Right, okay, I've got that. And then the other question with respect along those lines, if I might, Madam Chair, I don't believe that there's any periodic reporting as to the status with respect to the budget in terms of money allocated by the municipality. And again, that used to be something that was part of a process. Do you see any benefit in that, kind of updating council as where we are with respect to the board's budget?
I don't know why. In 15 years, we've never come in over budget or come back and asked you for more money because we spent. So I don't understand that. But I do want you to realize that meetings take time to prepare for. We don't take them lightly, so it takes a lot of staff time and effort. Preparing financials is the same way. The financials reflect a moment in time, so they can change by the time you actually have the meeting. I don't understand that. I mean, you can come over and visit us anytime. We'll show them to you. But once we start getting formal, we take away from our clients in order to prepare properly for a meeting with all due respect to council.
Mayor Redekop?
I might. I don't believe that we received information, or maybe we have received information with respect to any reserves. Are there any reserve funds held by the EDTC?
Yep, there are, and they're the same reserves or less than we had last year and the year before.
Right, and that's
we've actually expended more money than the budget has provided for. So the critical reserve that we have is $60,000, which the board maintains as a hedge against bankruptcy. And we have $150,000 that's been put away for, say, Armageddon. Project that requires significant marketing to manage an issue.
And I believe those reserve balances are part of the annual audited statements that are provided to the municipality each year. Okay. If I might, Madam Chair, with respect to one of the objectives, and it might be number one, and that part of it is business retention, how does the EDTC determine that there may be some specific business that's running into difficulties or needs assistance in terms of retention efforts?
Oh, well, there's a dozen ways of looking at that. We get invited by the owner of the company or the general manager. We get leads from our networks. So, we know people in various agencies such as the Chamber of Commerce and that who run into people. Live in the community, so we know some things that are going on, read the newspapers, so we're pretty much up on things like that. We have employees that come to us. We have suppliers that come to us. And sometimes when a company is running into trouble, we'll get calls from either their bookkeepers, their accountants, or their bankers.
You, if I might, Madam Chair, you had mentioned in connection with maybe capacity building, I don't recall it specifically, but the issue of skills shortage, that appears to be an issue in the municipality. Any initiatives planned with respect to trying to address that, or are there some already in existence?
Well, we're trying to work on that now. I should probably qualify the skill shortages. It's not just this community. It's Niagara as a whole, and in large part, a big chunk of Southern Ontario. Our purpose of bringing that forward, we were one of the first to identify that trend But we're trying to give people in Ford Erie a competitive advantage. And we're also saying, you know, look, just because it's a condition in Niagara is an opportunity. You take that situation, you turn it around. If we can help resolve it, if we can help manage it better, then that's more competitive for our businesses. So the one thing about skill shortages that we have is that's problematic is when we talk about skills, it's easy to talk to a business that says, look, I need five welders. How to find five welders is a whole different story. And then, of course, you could find 50 welders, and they all go, yeah, I'm a welder, but I don't want to work for you. I don't want to work in that town, or I don't want to work for that company, or I've already got a job. I don't want to move. They don't pay enough. There's a thousand things. So we can chase all these loose ends, and that's about all we would do. So we've been working in this last year a little more steady with the organizations that are mandated by the province in order to kind of focus their efforts or try to get them to focus efforts more in Fort Erie and work together on that. I think you'll see us try to increase that over the next year, but we can't be duplicating what these other organizations doing, and we certainly can't adopt their mandate because they're full-time as it is just doing that.
Mayor Redekop, anything further?
Just a couple more. So you had a chart, a pie chart, that showed the quite detailed breakdown of budget expenditures. And I'm just wondering, with respect to business expansion or retention, which you, I believe, referred to as the majority of the growth is through existing businesses, how much of that would be allocated to growth retention of existing businesses? How much of the budget? Can you tell from that chart?
Well, you can only see where we're projecting for this year. The problem that we have is that the EDC is more like Marines, right? We respond. So I'm happy not to spend a lot of money on business retention efforts because we don't have companies closing. If we went back a few years and looked at the effort and the money that we put into fleet, you'd see that pie slice quite a bit bigger. If you look at what happens when we were dealing with Pharmedics, that was a big effort, a lot of time, a lot of money. Once it's resolved or once the issue is no longer there, it kind of collapses. I mean, I think we're looking at relatively healthy community of businesses right now, even though they're under stress. I can't predict that I'm not going to get 20 calls in the next 6 months saying, listen, I need some help because I think I'm closing my business down. Don't touch wood. You don't want that to happen. So, but when the time comes, I go back to the board and say, look, we didn't anticipate this. We're going to have to shuffle some of those accounts around, and we're going to have to come up with enough money and time and resources to help this company. Like the Marines. Send us in, do the job, get out.
Thank you. You don't have a gun, I hope.
I can't answer that question.
And swords, and I know you've got swords as well. Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Are there any additional members of council that have questions or comments? Seeing none, I just have a couple, if I may. First of all, I was commenting on this presentation, and again, I don't know if it's because I have a sales and marketing background, but I think this is going to be very, very helpful for the development community. And the one thing that I seen that was very interesting is on page 41, I believe, you have a little bit of a graph and some analytics on the number of incoming calls that you receive. And I just wondered if you would be able to kind of elaborate and explain that a little bit. I see the majority of calls are coming from New York.
You know, there are some things that we don't put in this book, but I'm glad you point them out, Councillor. Madam Chairperson. We have the numbers of calls that we make incoming and outgoing, and we're probably in the range that we have 12,000 calls a year. We have a situation with meetings where we can put down how many hours we're forced or have to stay in meetings, not just with clients, but working our regional counterparts, and with council and with clients. And when you add them all up, it comes into a huge amount of time. The graphic specific to our 1-800 number, which covers North America. We get calls from everywhere, every state, every province. We get calls from overseas. But what we've done here is just to examine the calls that come in on our 1-888 number and the majority of them. So what we're telling you that from Western New York through Southern Ontario, we in the 905 district, the bigger the circle, the more emphasis there is on it. When we sit there in Toronto, you can see it's a little less. London's a little less. 613 area, Kingston and that, it's about the same amount almost as London. And it's interesting that we have a ton of calls coming in from 705 districts. If you're looking at the actual numbers, what you're looking for, like how many in total come in?
I was just looking more, so I found it interesting. I was assuming that there was interest from the majority of these states in the U.S. that we're calling in.
Absolutely. They call up and ask us about beaches. They call us up and ask us about what else there is to do, restaurants. Carolee, you got to add to that. Carolee has handled most of them. So visitors' guides, they ask us to mail them out. We send a ton of those out and mail them out. Oh, yeah. Yeah, so when NCC goes out, we provide information on Fort Erie to them. We have a package for new business development that we do, and we move out 40, 50 of those every year. We have new residence packages that we provide that people can tell where they're going, where the emergencies are, where town hall is, and things like that.
Interesting. And you actually just answered my next question, which was going to be what mechanism do you have in place to gauge the ROI on the visitor's guide? But it sounds like you're able to track that through calls. So you're confirming where that the visitor's guides are actually hitting and being successful with specific areas.
Well, when you're producing 15,000 at the first, I think it was 15,000, and your cost to produce was 25, and then you had about 20 for distribution. Your ROI sucked. And now that we're only spending 3,000 to actually produce the product, and everything goes into distribution, it's pretty high. But we have had some folks. We have in the past had proven that out. One was Chuck Lowen, who was the head of the Peace Bridge Duty Free, and he was on our board. And so what he would do is he would buy the back page and put coupon on it. And we could check the coupon returns and those people who come back with the coupons. So we were able to quantifiably demonstrate people are reading it, people are using it.
Thank you. And lastly, I'm just wondering if there would be some sort of an electronic copy of this package. I know my constituents would probably love to have access to this, and I'm not sure, you know, how many will come into the town hall and ask for this, and certainly don't know how much you have printed. So I just wondered if perhaps the town could put something on our website if there was an electronic version of this package.
It will be going up on PDF. I think we're able to get it up no later than Monday.
Oh, excellent.
If you go to the Fort Erie website, Fort Erie EDC website, it'll be there. When that happens, we'll call over to Kelly Davis, and he can provide a link to that. Like, you don't want it sitting on everybody's server taking up space. It's 58 pages, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they can just link it over, and it'll go straight to them. So, yes, we will be doing that. We've talked about it, and we've talked to our service provider for our website to be able to do that.
Very good. Thank you very much. Councillor Butler?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through you to Mr. Thibert. I just wanted to take the opportunity to thank you for your presentation. It was very well done. I agree with Madam Chair that the presentation material that you supplied us is excellent. I didn't want to lose this opportunity to thank you for the hard work that you do and your team does. I also wanted to acknowledge the fact that you work jointly with the staff here at the Town of Fort Erie to bring in those possibilities, and working and building on relationships takes time. We understand that, and the possibilities that are ahead of us in this community are to say the least, very encouraging. So thank you very much.
If I may, I don't want to forget about. It's not that I forgot. I should perhaps specifically mention senior staff. We work together very closely. There's a time when we're involved and bring projects to the table. Then there's a time when we're involved together. And then there's a time when they're in charge of the development for the approvals and process of buildings and things like that. And then we get back with the client in terms of marketing, ribbon cutting, employment requirements, and then ongoing for problems. So when I pointed out that graphic about, got it there? The graphic of the continuum of economic development, I should have focused a little more on the senior staff. We work very closely together. We all have our roles and we have joint roles. And that includes also our relationship with our economic development counterparts in the region. Of course, the counterparts in the region for engineering and planning. So, yeah, it is a team effort, and the better the team, the better the effort.
Thank you. Councillor Passero?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to speak briefly, anecdotally, to the visitor's guide. When I had a retail storefront, we would see visitors come in either to Fort Erie or coming through Fort Erie from almost every state and almost every province just because of the nature of our business. And I was literally surprised by the number of people that would come in with that visitor's guide in their hand. And these were people coming from states where we don't do the visitor guide distribution, as per the graphic Mr. Tiber put up, but they're finding it along the way in those border states and border communities. So it's money well spent. It definitely puts our best foot forward, and I always look forward to the next issue. So thank you for doing that on an annual basis.
Councilor Nutt?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through you to Mr. Tiber. First, thank you for the presentation. The booklets I found very interesting this year, and I'm glad you changed the format. They're a lot like you get from a corporate company every year that's public that you want to read up on their financials. So I think it's a lot of good information in there, a lot contained. I just had some questions just around strategic thoughts and initiatives for the future. We do have quite a few large projects on the go. I know that there's probably some more coming down in the pipe that you can't really talk about tonight or right now. But seeing the big announcement in Niagara Falls in regards to what Jim Diodati is doing down there and identifying that there's been a significant change in attitude at the regional level with some reorganization there, as Chair Kaslin had said, it was a team-building year for 2015. I know that currently you're short a staff member. Are there any plans to leverage that additional resource from the region as another tool in the toolbox for Fort Erie? And can you just give everybody just a brief overview on your thoughts on the significantly large investment from China in Niagara Falls, and if we can see any expected spinoff from that?
I'm not certain why when we talk about $1 billion in our community of 30,000, why $1 billion in Niagara with 90,000 is a bigger issue. But I can tell you what $1 billion looks like. If you go over on the QEW and you're Lions Creek and McLeod Road, you'll see signs on the west side that say Empire Housing. And if you go in behind there on Kalar Road, you will see is really one of Ontario's premier housing developments and the biggest and fastest development in the history of Niagara. If you take a look at that right now, there's over $1.5 invested there. So if you take a peek at that, that's $1.5 billion, and it gives you an idea what $1 billion is going to look like. The reason I bring up a development in Niagara and that $1.5 billion is because those are the investors we have for the Miller Creek Marina. That's the Davis family. So they're very familiar with billions. The mayor and I talk to them, and when they talk the word 10, I think 10 bucks, the mayor thinks 10,000, and they're thinking 10 billion. It's just a question of how you look at it. But they're used to that. So the spinoffs can come. The idea there is more housing and more shopping and more of a Chinese community is what my understanding is from my colleagues. So there's a marketplace for that, and I think that they're going to develop around that. So I'm not certain how many spinoffs will come this way, but certainly our projects will spin off immeasurably throughout the region. Our job is to capture and be ready to capture as much economic activity as we can.
Thank you. Yeah, I was, the reason why I brought up those developments is I'm hoping that through your expertise, we as a council have some land decisions to make, planning, and part of our directive from our strategic plan is to look at things like this. So I was wondering, from your expertise and being in Fort Erie for 15 years, is there any way that we can capitalize or catch some of that economic spinoff? So should we be planning for additional commercial space in our downtown cores as we're going through right now and doing our CIPs and secondary plans? I mean, that was the what generated the question. Just I wanted to get your expert opinion.
Well, certainly we need industrial land. Commercial land, I leave it to the town. I mean, they can consult with me on whatever expertise or ideas I have on the marketplace there, but I'm not the one to start looking at box stores and malls. That's not what we do. But certainly it happens. It's part of the growth. I think there's, if I've absorbed anything from my colleagues on a town, we have quite a bit of infill for housing that we can take care of. We have quite a bit of infill for commercial land. But it's the issue of industrial land service ready to go. If we don't have it ready to go, developers will move on. They are getting to that point of that pent-up demand. I've talked about it for 5 years. There's always been a little hiccup in the economy someplace that holds them back, but they have all the money they need. And when they say, I got to build, that's not what they're telling us. It's like business ease. When a businessman tells you, I need 50 acres or 100 acres because I want to build, he's really telling you, I have to make money by X amount of days, hence, like 6 months from now or a year from now. And every day that I'm not is money I'm not making. So if you can't get me a development permit and you're not ready to go, I got to go someplace else. And that's how business really works. So if we don't have the product, we can't attract the business.
You still have the floor, Councilor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through yourself to Mr. T-Bear. I'm not so sure that a lot of the community in town is aware about the changes with the OLG and how it's going to impact the racing. I know that we received a business plan previously when we were doing the budget that was prepared in 2014 for the Fort Erie Racetrack by the Innovation Group. So I just wanted to know if we could maybe get a progress update or your thoughts on what the reorganization at the provincial level could mean for the track. And I know that this is all speculative talk, but I'd just like your opinion on it.
Well, that's a very good question, and I'd like the answer too. It doesn't seem to be forthcoming. I know the Premier is a bit frustrated that she's been talking about and taking actions to integrate horse racing into OLG. Not much has happened. They have now dedicated an individual at OLG to do that. Most people are a bit perplexed that that person has no history with horses whatsoever or the horse industry. So I'm not certain. I suspect that it's getting close to seeing a plan, and our job is to make sure Fort Erie is part of that plan.
Councilor Lubert.
Yes, thank you very much, Madam Chair. Just to go back to comments that you had made earlier about the package and putting the package on the website. I'm not quite sure if you were talking about the package that we received, the budget plan or the slideshow, but I would definitely like to have a copy of the slideshow.
I was actually going to ask Mr. Tiber for a copy of the slideshow he presented tonight.
Okay.
And I was referring more to this package, the more thorough package, a link to it.
Hey, after 15 years, we've been well trained by one of the best clerks in Ontario, and we always bring a copy of what we present. So the presentation is a much reduced version of that. So to be clear, Madam Chair, the document itself will be going up as a PDF on the EDC site, and we'll call into the town and have them link it, we can send you over a copy of this.
Thank you. And just to clarify for the listeners, the package that we received is, it's a little bit more extensive and a little bit more in-depth, I believe, than the presentation that you gave tonight. So it's actually to their advantage that you'll be posting that. Anything further, Councillor Liebert? Thank you very much again to yourself and your staff and your board.
Thank you for the opportunity.
And that brings us to reports. Report CBC 04-2014. Can I get a mover for that report? Councillor McDermott? That's on the floor. Is there any questions or comments? Councillor Patero?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Before we get into the discussion of each report, if I could, through you to our Director of Finance, some information regarding the next step for both of these budgets. I note that each one shows a recommendation that it be incorporated into the consolidated general levy operating budget. If there are any councillors thinking of any changes, does that have to be done tonight, or do we have an opportunity to do that when the general levy budget comes forward?
Mr. Jansen, could you comment on that?
Yes, the Chair, to Councillor Passero. The proposed increases as submitted tonight will be included in the report coming on January 27th. And I would suggest any amendments or changes that are proposed be done at that time.
Thank you, Mr. Jansen. Councillor Patero?
No, thank you for that, Madam Chair.
Mayor Edicott?
Thank you, Madam Chair. That's what I anticipated, but I'm not really sure that the wording is appropriate. I would have thought that it would be more that we would receive these reports, both from the Library Board and EDTC, and that they would be considered with the general levy operating budget. So I'm just wondering whether we shouldn't amend the wording of each of these so that if over the next 2 weeks we have additional questions or we're going to be receiving information, it's clear that we're going to be including this in our package, but it's for consideration in the global material that we will have. That being the case, Madam Chair, I'd be happy to move that the words "and incorporated into the consolidated" be removed and the words to be considered with the be added, so that it's clear that we're going to be considering this along with the operating budget.
Okay, so you're making an amendment to this motion and you're putting that on the floor.
I am, yes.
Okay. Are there any comments or questions on the motion as amended? Councillor Liebertz?
Yes, thank you very much, Madam Chair. I'll be supporting the amendment, but I think before we actually vote on it, I think we've been getting away from the fact that we've been making some amendments and we haven't been reading the amendments out to the general to the general public so that they could hear it in full as amended. So I'm just wondering if we could get a full reading of the amended
version. Yes, I agree.
In fact, we've agreed to that the clerk would read the amended.
Yes, thank you.
Madam Clerk, did you want to read the amendment?
Certainly. The amendment would be of the current recommendation on the floor to remove and incorporate it into the consolidated general levy operating budget. That would be removed and replaced with to be considered with the general levy operating budget. That would be the amendment.
I think what Councillor... Correct me if I'm wrong. I think Councillor Liebertz wants you to read what the amendment would look like if it's passed.
Certainly. If the amendment passes, the main recommendation as amended would read that Council receives for information report number CBC 04-2016 regarding the Fort Erie Public Library Board 2016 grant request as set out in Appendix 1 to be considered with the general levy operating budget.
Was there anything further, Councillor Liebertz? Are there any other questions regarding the amendment? Seeing none, I'll call the question. All those in favor? That carries. So now, back to the report as amended. Are there any questions or comments? Seeing none, I'll call the question. All those in favor? That also carries. Madam Clerk, just for clarification, Mayor Redekop's amendment was applicable to both reports and the recommendation?
I think we can deal with the next one next, and I'll...
Okay. Report CBC 05-2016. Can I get a mover? Councillor Butler? Comments or questions? Mayor Redekop?
Chair, I wonder if we could implement the same amendment so that if amended, this resolution would read, the Council receives for information report number CBC 05 for 2016 regarding the ETC grant request as set on Appendix 1 to be considered with the general levy operating budget. I'd like to move that amendment.
That amendment's on the floor. Are there any questions or comments regarding the amendment? Seeing none, I'll call the question. All those in favor? That carries. Now the original, or the motion as amended, is on the floor. Is there any questions or comments? Seeing none, I'll call the question. All those in favor? That carries as well. And I'm going to hand the chair back over to you now, Mayor Redekop.
Thank you very much, Councillor Zanko, and a very good meeting this evening. So we're at now date of next meeting, which is the General Levy Operating Budget meeting on Wednesday, January the 27th, 2016 at 6 o'clock here in the Council Chambers. If necessary, the following Wednesday, February 3rd, 2016, again at 6 o'clock. Can I have a motion to adjourn, Councillor Nutt?
Certainly, Your Worship. The Council and Budget Committee for the Town of Fort Erie hereby adjourns at 8:17 p.m. to reconvene in the next General Levy meeting for the General Levy Operating Budget on Wednesday, January 27, 2016.
All those in favor? That is unanimous. Thank you.